Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, everybody. Welcome. Nice to have you back with us today here on Close Up Talk Radio. We're going to dip back into the world of coaching today. I love talking to people who've decided to become coaches. And as you know, it's a very big profession. Lots and lots of very talented people have decided to become coaches to help others. Obviously, there is a coach out there who can help you in almost every aspect of your life. And today we're going to be talking to an executive business coach, someone who helps others in the world of business whose careers may have stalled out a little bit and they may need a little help to get up to the next rung of that ladder, so to speak. And our guest today is a highly qualified coach who points out business has its own culture, its own language, and its own expectations. And if you work in the world of business, you know that. From managers to vice presidents to C-suite executives, many talented people have actually stalled out because they couldn't grasp those expectations. Well, David Keating, who is our guest today, specializes in helping potential employees identify what really matters and what doesn't matter, and it is important to be able to tell the difference. David is an executive coach with outstanding Ivy League academic credentials, plus over 35 years of deep practical business experience. And he points out, let's face it, you have great talent, you're an intelligent individual, you've had a lot of success, but somewhere along the line lately, things have stalled out. And he points out, if we work together, that is, you and he work together, you will get to that next level faster, and you will be able to do it with a lot less pain. Prior to becoming a coach, David had the classic corporate career. He graduated from Harvard, and he quickly moved up the corporate ladder in financial services. And as he went through his career, he discovered he had the most satisfaction and the most success when he was helping develop other people. It's great that he realized that. And one day he said he was sitting in a leadership development class, and he realized, I don't want to go to the next level. I love what I'm doing right now. I want to teach others how to get there. And developing people at the next level really does take a lot of work, and it takes time. The most challenging coaching client is someone that is stuck in self-focused thinking. But as David points out, if they can escape that way of thinking, it can really have a big positive effect on themselves as well as the organization they are with. When someone realizes they have been in a self-imposed prison and they open the door and they walk out and begin to have fun again, that gives him the greatest sense of accomplishment. It's the power of coaching. The final decision always lies in the hands of the client, and the client is the expert in the domain of their life, their career, their decisions, and coaching honors that. Coaching is really a partnership. So that is the way he looks at this field that he is so highly specialized in and so thoroughly qualified in. So it's really a great honor to have David Keating with us. He's based in Midlothian, Virginia, which is in the middle of Virginia, not far from Richmond. So let's welcome him aboard now and talk to him about his decision to focus on coaching, to actually step away from the corporate world to become a coach, and how he got there and how he made all these decisions and obviously how he helps others. David Keating, welcome. Nice to have you with us. How are you today?
Doug, thank you. I'm thrilled to be here, and it's great to meet your audience and have this conversation.
Well, look, it's great for me. I love talking to people like you who've made this transition into coaching. It doesn't happen easily. And I'm just wondering, what made you, well, I already said what made you become a coach. Let's talk a little bit about your career, your background, so that people can get an idea of what you went through in your corporate career. Obviously, you went through Harvard, came out of Harvard, and then pick it up at that point. What was the role? Not the role. You know, what are the steps you went through after you got out of college? What happened?
Absolutely. So my undergraduate work was at the University of Maryland, classic finance and economics background, and then I went on to the Harvard Business School a couple of years later and came out and did what most Harvard Business School graduates do, went into strategy consulting and operational consulting and, you know, did that for 3 or 4 or 5 years. And then I tried my hand at direct operational leadership and did that from both the perspective of having a team of, you know, high-paid, high-potential analysts to having a call center and living in that environment and helping motivate and inspire and lead in that environment. And from there, I started to enter more deeply into the financial services area and their product marketing, product launching. You know, Doug, it was about as cookie cutter as you can get. And I just continued to take larger and larger roles in those areas. And the most recent role, the one I finally stepped away from, was working on sales and negotiating and contract writing for multi-billion dollar asset acquisitions for a Fortune 100 bank. And so, you know, being a part of an elite team, I discovered that you have, in addition to that competency and those long hours where you work together, there's somebody on the team who keeps everybody together, everyone lighthearted, everyone focused on the human side of life. And oddly enough, time and time and time again, that person happened to be me. And that was part of that message that was speaking to me in that leadership development class. You know, I could go on and do larger deals, or I could go on and do something else in the corporate world or diversify out of financial services. But, like, my heart spoke to me and said, you've got to be a coach, man. This is what you were made to do. So that's when I started making my plans. And then a couple years after that, ended up at Georgetown and did their executive coaching program, got certified there, got certified at the International Coaching Federation level as an associate coach. And since then, I have been spending as many hours as I can with clients and loving every minute of it.
You know, you point out something very interesting. I would assume with the career background that you had, even without going through a coaching program like you did at Georgetown or getting accredited, you probably were already highly qualified enough to be a coach on your own. Do you think that's true? Or was the coaching program really critically important for you as you look back on it?
You know, Doug, great question. Like, both are true. There was deep qualifications from simply having lived through these experiences, but there's a power to coaching which comes from the questioning of the coach and trying to avoid being the mentor and giving the answer, because the power lies in unlocking what's inside the client and asking that powerful question. And the great thing about a formal training and accreditation is it teaches you how to apply that framework in a very practical way. So you get to combine the best of both worlds. And I'm really glad I did the Georgetown program for that. But to your point, yes, you could have gone, I don't know, 70-80% of the way as a business coach without it.
In your career, I mean, did you – obviously it sounds like you had a good time. Were you one that who switched jobs and had to move a lot? Or did you stay generally in the, you know, if you went to school, you know, in the northeast, stay in that area? I'm just wondering, you didn't mention any companies, and that's perfectly all right. I'm just wondering if you had to jockey around the country a lot, and that was one of the things. Maybe you wanted to settle down and be a coach, and you don't have to face that kind of thing. How about it? How was your career from that perspective?
Interestingly enough, I was pretty blessed to be fairly stable in the companies that I work for. You know, I would do a 5-7 year stint, and then, you know, market conditions would change, and financial services is very fluid, a lot of acquisitions and mergers. But I largely stayed on the East Coast and was able to be close to family. So my kids grew up with both grandparents, as you know, so they had a double grandparenting experience, and I was really happy about that. Mm-hmm. And we were able to live in cities where commutes were sometimes outrageous, but not always. And so, you know, like I said, I feel pretty blessed it was balanced, but largely East Coast.
When you talked to your wife and told her you wanted to leave the corporate world and move into becoming an independent coach, was she in favor of that? she support you?
She was very excited about it.
Good for you.
And the main reason was because she knew that this cognitive dissonance was happening. You know, there was something in my spirit that was longing to do something else, and the demands of negotiating multi-billion-dollar deals are quite extensive. And so, you know, she was like, yeah, if this is the next phase, the next season for you, I'm all in favor. And here's the really interesting thing, Doug. About a month ago, my college-age daughter said, you know, Dad, you walk a little taller now. And I'm like, really? And she said, yeah. You know, you come down to dinner and you're present. You're not kind of weighted down on the next 7 o'clock meeting that you've got to go back to. And I'm like, okay. Well, there's some confirmation that was the right decision.
No kidding. I only ask that because I would assume we have a lot of people who could have been in your position. They're in the corporate arena,
mm-hmm.
and they keep thinking about, you know, I'd like to be a coach. I'd like to step away and do that. You did it. And I was just wondering if you had good support from your family to do it. Obviously,
yeah.
It's been a blessing for you, so that's good. Let's talk a little bit about how you – go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say one of the fascinating things about the clients I've worked with is they've asked the same kinds of questions, and they think the spouse will not be supportive. And in most cases, the spouse is overwhelmingly supportive. So anyone listening curious, I encourage you to go and have the conversation because you're going to be most likely pleasantly surprised.
Well, that's good. That's really good advice. That's funny. I've never asked anyone that question before. But it's really so important. Let's talk about the people you help.
Okay.
What's the key? Here's a good question for you. What's the key to being a good coach? How would you answer that?
Wow.
Don't mean to stump you, but you're there.
Yeah.
How did you answer that?
Okay. I think the first thing is a profound sense of presence. When you are working with a client, no one else in the world exists except for that client. And they one time asked, and I just can't recall his name. I can see his face. But one of the interviewers for 60 Minutes was consistently requested. You know, no one really wanted 60 Minutes to call their office. But when they did, they wanted this guy to do the interview. And when they got to the bottom of figuring this thing out, it was because that interviewer wanted to hear their story. Like, he was there to give them the platform. And he was there in a non-judgmental way and a way that people felt like it was a really fair exchange. And so that is a lot of the foundation of coaching is simply being present, being non-judgmental. But I think the real power in coaching is having the courage as a coach to ask the probing question, to ask the question about what's the game changer, what is your soul longing to do, what are the real obstacles versus those that are imagined, and just pressing forward. And that takes a lot of trust between client and coach. And I think one of the reasons I've been effective is because there's an instant credibility with the 3 decades plus of the business background. The language is the same, the conditions are the same, and so forth. And so it's a lot easier for that client to test the waters, to find out if I'm someone who gets it. And then once those defenses go down, then the real power of coaching begins, which is the self-exploration.
Yeah, that's very interesting. By the way, did you ever have a coach yourself?
Sure, absolutely.
You did?
Yes, and also as an executive coach, it is good to periodically get coached. It keeps you from becoming too focused on your own thoughts and frameworks, right? You need to have people in your life that challenge you. So I had, when I selected a coach, who was fundamentally different from me. I picked a female coach. I picked someone who lived on the West Coast. I picked someone who had an entirely different life experience from me because I wanted that different perspective. And but I'm kind of unusual. Like, I'm always pushing the boundaries of thought. So, yes, and fabulous results. Super, she's a super coach, and to this day is one of the, you know, special people in my life that I am very grateful to have known.
Well, that's interesting, too. That's very good. Let's talk about people who come to you and what happens. How do you begin a coaching practice with someone? And I gather initially you have to have that conversation between the two of you to see if you think it's going to work. I would assume not every coach is ideal with every individual. You have to get that match, you know. So how do you start
Yes.
with somebody? Talk a little bit about that.
There are a couple of pieces in the early framework of an agreement. The first is to level set and have a common understanding that coaching is not like when we were kids growing up and doing Little League. Like, the coach doesn't have the answers. The coach has the question. The coach may have frameworks and ideas to present, but really this is client-driven. And if a client hasn't experienced professional coaching before, that's a little bit of a mindset shift. And so we kind of get on the same page with that. And then the second is to establish that this is all about your goals. This is not about any agenda that I have as a coach. This is about getting you where you want to go. And then the next step is talking about, hey, you're in control at all times. If I ask a question and you're not comfortable with that question, you stop the process. Ultimately, as you say, Doug, if it's not a good match, you owe your coach nothing. Go on and find another coach. Like, it is about the client's outcome and achieving greatness for the client. So if I'm the right coach, I'll be very honored. But if I'm not the right coach, I'll be happy that they've gone and found the right coach. And so you have these kind of structural foundations that you lay in place, and then you kind of dive right in. All right, what is the big thing that you want to accomplish, or what is the driver that brought you to seek a coach?
Right. One other question I have. Your background is heavily in the financial aspect of industry,
mm-hmm.
or the world of business. Does it matter what your background is, you know, whether it was finance to the client who's coming to work with you? I mean, you could really work with anyone. A coach can work with anyone in almost any background. Wouldn't that be right? They might be in manufacturing or whatever. But the fact that you're so thoroughly knowledgeable about the financial aspect really doesn't matter. You could help anyone in any background. Am I wrong?
Yes.
I'm right about
yeah.
that, aren't I?
Yeah.
Cool.
And we've had this, and I've had clients. I've had clients in government. I've had clients in nonprofits. I've had clients in large companies,
right.
Fortune 100s, and small companies. What we find and what I've found is that folks will feel like, let's say it's another business person. They will feel like, oh, well, he'll understand the language. He'll understand the environment and so forth. But there are many clients who say, you know what? I don't know exactly what I need. And what really matters is those skills of a coach that cut across experience and industry. So, yes, you can receive very powerful and effective coaching. Like, for instance, in my case, let's just take my personal case. I was a financial guy, right? But my coach had nothing to do with the financial services industry, and I picked her for that reason. So some people like that comfort of familiarity, and other people are like, you know what? I need to step outside of my mental model because that's kind of what's gotten me stuck. And, you know, from a formal coaching, if you talk to the instructors and designers at Georgetown and the other great schools across the country, they would agree with you completely and say there's no difference based on background and industry. You can coach anyone. I just happen to find that some folks are more comfortable if background is similar, but it's not a requirement.
Yeah. You just mentioned something interesting. You had a coach who was a female. Do you find it easier working or coaching a woman than a man, or a man or a woman, or does it not matter at all? How do you feel about that?
You know, this is kind of brings up an interesting topic, because I think about all the great coaches that are out there, And what is it that distinguishes what I do from the other great coaches? And that is that I see less a person in front of me, and I see more of a human soul. And that soul may be male, female. They may have a different background from me. They may be in a different economic status. Like, there is something beautiful and powerful and wonderfully made about that person. And that's my job as a coach to see. That's kind of like, you know, we didn't talk about how I got started. My first coaching assignment was at age 12. And I'll tell you the aside story if we have time later. But
okay.
The key is that to see the angle that the client does not see. That's the essence of coaching. And so I will find some of my female clients, my women clients, they will pick me because I'm male. Some of my male clients will pick me despite the fact I'm male, or vice versa. So everyone comes to the engagement with their reason for what draws you. But in terms of how I approach the client, I see a human soul first. And then from there, we start looking at all the other layers and wrappers that come along with it.
That's really interesting. I know coaching is a fascinating field to be in, but to help others and to help bring them out, I think two things I want. What kind of candidate comes to you primarily? I mean, what are they looking for when they come to you? Is it, as I pointed out in the beginning, their career has kind of stalled out maybe and they know they need help? Obviously, that would spur them on to get a coach. Sometimes people are asked to go get a coach by their bosses. That mm-hmm. happens too. But talk a little bit about the kind of candidate that comes to you.
Okay. So you've got the first two buckets for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So a self-realization that I'm not getting where I need to go. That occurs sometimes when a person sees a peer get promoted and they're like, how'd that happen? How'd I get blindsided? You know, the second, the manager says, hey, I think you would benefit from working with a coach. The more upwardly mobile reasons are, I just got promoted to vice president. What do I do now? Like, I've never done this before. Or I've had folks who have their entire career been technical people, and at age 60 have been inherited a team of 20 people for the first time in their career, and they're like, oh, my gosh, you know, what do I do now? And then there are other folks who, like particularly at the C-suite level, when they start to think about how do I develop my leadership team, sometimes it's straightforward succession planning. Sometimes it is more about how do we become a great, inspiring leadership team. And they realize, you know what, I need some fresh ideas, perspective. Or my favorite category, of course, is someone with a dream that they're afraid to tell anybody about, that they don't think it's possible, and they're seeing all the obstacles, but they have just enough hope not to give up. And so they seek a coach, and they are looking for a sounding board, and does it sound logical? How would I get there if I wanted to do it? And so forth and so on. Does that help?
That helps a lot. Those are great examples, especially when you talk about somebody being elevated to a vice president level and they don't think they're ready for it. You know, they haven't prepared that much. That's a great example, and I'm sure that happens quite a lot.
It happens a lot. Yeah.
Let's talk about how often you work with someone and how long these engagements typically last. You don't turn someone around overnight. I know it takes time. How do you work with, your practice? How do you work with someone? How does it go?
Yeah, that's a great question. So typically an engagement is 6 months, or let's just say the initial engagement is 6 months. Some folks prefer a heavy sprint, 3 months. And some of your six-month engagements, you know, depending on where the person is in their career, might renew or go on to maybe a 12-month engagement. But let's just call it 6 months is a good sweet spot. And depending on all the vagaries of schedule and time, probably will meet with a coach twice a month. Some will meet with a coach every week for the first 6 weeks, and then on a twice a month cadence. So that's typically the pattern. And it also will depend on the type of work they're doing. There are three sort of levels of coaching. Transactional is the first. It's like, I want to be a better speaker. Transitional is the one we talked about. I just became a vice president. And what do vice presidents do? They're different from senior directors. And then the third level is transformational. I want to be somebody different. I don't like what's happening here. Or I just came out of a very difficult professional or personal situation and I got blindsided. There's a lot of confusion around this, and I really need to think about whether or not I have to be a different person. So as you move up those three levels of types of engagements, that tends to give you a sense of length of time, starting with maybe 3 months, and 6 months, and 12.
Give me an example of someone, and I know you worked with many, of someone that you really were able to help and help turn their life and their career around. No names, just an example. How would you answer that?
Okay. One of the most powerful transformation experiences that I had was you have a person with a lot of talent but does not understand how talented they are. And we were working through, you know, to get them out of their left brain. Sometimes we'll use a right brain visualization or an analogy. So I said, okay, what's your favorite pastime? And she said, it's the theater. And I said, okay, great. What is your role in the theater? And she said, I'm the backstage manager. And I sensed that wasn't quite the answer. So I said, okay, what's really your role? And she said, I want to be the lead singer. I said, okay, let's be the lead singer. And as I looked at the data surrounding her performance at the office, it was clear she wasn't just the lead singer. People loved to hear her sing. And so she developed a one-sentence mindset that is, I am the lead singer. People love to hear me sing. I will not be quiet anymore. And went on to be invited into very high-level executive meetings because she finally saw in herself what everybody else had seen. But until she saw it, she couldn't move forward.
That's a great example. You helped to bring her out. No question about it.
Yeah.
You know, David, this is – I wish we had a lot more time to talk to you because you're amazing to talk to. I want to point out the best way to get in touch with David for anyone who's listening and would like to talk to him is to use his email at the moment. And let me give you his email address. It's davidkeatingcoaching@gmail.com. And David Keating, it's easy to spell. Keating is K-E-A-T-I-N-G. So it's davidkeatingcoaching@gmail.com. David, I want to thank you so much for taking this time. We have a lot more time, but we don't. But I really get the gist that you love what you're doing, and you really are happy that you made this switch into the world of coaching full-time, aren't you?
I am thrilled. I am absolutely thrilled, Doug.
I mean, you know you've made the right move, no question about that. I think
you're
a good coach and you know what you're doing, and I think you would be great, great, great to talk to if somebody was really interested in having a coach and know that they need it. David, thanks for taking the time with us. Again, if you're interested in talking to David, it's davidkeatingcoaching@gmail.com. Send him an email, and he'll get back to you, I'm sure of that. David, thanks for being with us. I really appreciate it. Okay? Great chatting with you.
Thanks, Doug. Have a great night.
Sure. You're very, very welcome. Thank you so much. That's it for this edition of Close Up Talk Radio, everybody. I'm Doug Llewellyn. We thank you for being with us. See you next time.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
We do. Hope you have a great time, everybody. Take care and be safe. See you next time. Bye-bye.